Blog Talk Radio.
Live on Blog Talk Radio, in cooperation with Scout.com, WarNest.com, and Frat House Sports, this is Inside the War Nest, the show made by Philadelphia Eagles fans for Philadelphia Eagles fans. Have a comment or question? Call us live on the air, 347-826-9964. That's 347-826-9964. And now, to take you through the week that was and the week to come in Eagles football, here are your armchair generals, Jim Williams and Mike McShane, inside the War Nest.
The night before Thanksgiving, and all through the Delaware Valley, I know I didn't have time to come up with a proper poem. Oh well. Welcome aboard. It is Inside the War Nest here on Blog Talk Radio, part of the Frat House Sports Network in association with Scout.com, and of course, the host site WarNest.com. I'm Jim Williams. So glad you're joining us for another hour or so of great Philadelphia-oriented football talk. But let it be said. We're not opposed to listening to the viewpoints of Dallas Cowboys fans this week because we are less than 24 hours away from the big game. Arguably the biggest Thanksgiving game to hit Dallas ever, when the Eagles take on the Dallas Cowboys. Oh, it's going to be glorious. And joining me to talk about that show, that very encounter, I should say, on this show, that's where the word show was coming from the Frat House. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you Michael McShane. Happy Thanksgiving, my friend.
Same back to you, my friend. This is exciting.
How's everything
isn't
doing
it,
there? Yeah.
Oh,
we're good.
We
almost have the setup properly in place here. Yeah, we're there.
Well, for a second it was, and then all of a sudden it just poof.
You just dropped out. The bottom dropped out on the switchboard. But that should give you no cause for concern, ladies and gentlemen, because we are, if nothing else, adaptable.
Absolutely.
That's about it. Well, at least I am.
How are you doing there? A lot of snow or what?
Actually, no snow down here. No snow. Oh. We're right by the Delaware Bay, so we're doing fine. It's all of the liquid variety of precipitation. Ooh. You guys get some snow up there by the frat house?
Yeah, we did. We got probably not quite as bad as everybody was saying, but probably a good maybe inch and a half, 2 inches of slushy mess.
There you go. But I was just enough to make
just enough to make it look festive, you know what I mean?
Festive, yes. Well, see, when people like Sheena Parveen and Cecily Tynan are talking about the weather, I don't hear a word they say, for obvious.
I gotcha. I think I understand.
Yes, I think so, too. But we're not here to talk about weather. In fact, weather will play no role, really, when you get right down to it in the game tomorrow afternoon. In Dallas, weather a factor, never there, I say. We're going to talk about that game a little bit later on with our special guest, CowboysHQ.com contributor Jordan Ross. He's been kind enough to join us. He's a brave soul for going on a show involving the Philadelphia Eagles. But he's good people. He's really amped about this, so I really, really can't wait to talk with him. We're also going to talk a little bit in a moment about the game that was, from this past weekend, a 43-24 convincing victory. I put convincing in air quotes and with a question mark by it. We'll talk about how convincing or not convincing the win was, and some of the pros and cons from that. But all throughout the hour plus that we're going to be with you here tonight, it's all about you. If you're an Eagles fan, if you're a Cowboys fan, we want to hear from you. Are you excited about this game? The rivalry right now, it has never meant more, in my humble opinion. You've got two teams, same record, division on the line. That's what this is all about. Let us know. Give us your insights. What you're thinking about when it comes to this Thanksgiving meeting. 347-826-9964. That's one way you can reach us. 347-826-9964. You could also click the Skype on our show page. That's another great way to get a hold of us. Reach out and touch us, as they say. And you could be like our own Brandon Hain. He is joining us in the chat room because he is. And you can log into the chat, free to log into. You may have to sign up for a free account. Ain't no biggie. And plus, we can correspond with you if you have any questions or comments for either of us or for our guest Jordan Ross from CowboysHQ.com over the course of the next hour or so. Lots of ways to get a hold of us, to reach out and touch us, and just don't smack us because, well, we bruise easily. At least I do. Let's get into it, Michael. Let's talk about what we saw on Sunday against the Tennessee Titans. The game was over really before it began because it started off on one of the greatest 13-second sequences in the history of Philadelphia Eagles football. Kickoff goes 7 yards deep in the end zone, and Josh Huff just takes it to the freaking house. 107 yards for a touchdown. That really set the tone in the whole game. Now, let's make no bones about it. Without that, the Eagles wouldn't have been off the blocks. I mean, they probably would have won the game, but that really set the tone for putting the throttle down. Just how important was that opening kickoff?
Well, and here you go with the special teams again. You know, right. I got to be honest, you know, and so many people have you know, talked about the special teams unit. Oh, the special teams, they got one of the best. And I always kind of, I don't, maybe I'm old school, but I always kind of look at it and I go, special teams are fluff. Come on, let's get it straight. It's a little
not
bit
this
of
year. Not it's this
luck.
Year.
It's luck. That's what it is. But
well,
you know,
you gotta be.
Jim,
good
I gotta
to be
no. I'm listen. They're making me a believer. Truly,
okay.
They are making me a believer. When you come out and you can take somebody like Josh Huff, who hasn't—I mean, look, let's get it straight. The guy really—he hasn't really done anything. Not that the Eagles are necessarily using him for anything so far this year, but you know, makes a big appearance in this game. It goes 107 yards. You gotta think there's something to this. The Philadelphia Eagles special teams, I guess, are making me a believer. Correct me if I'm wrong, though.
Yes.
Think about it. In years past, when you've seen a team with a really good special teams, you know, I'm trying to think. I remember a number of years ago. I'm trying to remember who the guy was who was always back there on. Kickbacks for the Kansas City Chiefs. Was it Dante Hall? Okay, I remember that particular year. That team just seemed... It was insane what they did on special teams.
I mean, it got to the point where they were trying to purposely kick away, okay, we'll give you the 40-yard line so we don't let the human joystick take over.
Right. And yet, this Philadelphia Eagles team, I mean, they take time out to practice this stuff. You got to give it to them. Yeah,
you got to give Dave Phipp, the coach there, a lot of credit because we've gone a number of years, you know this, even in our good years a decade ago, where special teams outside of the kicker left much to be desired. Now special teams is not just something of note. It's almost a primary focus for this team.
It's part of the team. Yeah, and it's a part of the game plan almost on a weekly basis. Look how many – we haven't even been on the air that much. This is only our sixth production. But just think in those six programs that we've done so far, Jim, how many times we brought up special teams. I think it's been every single program.
And rightfully so. By the way, credit to Josh Huff. He was named the NFC Special Teams Player of the Week earlier today. He's the first Eagles rookie to ever lay claim to that award. And it's the third time an Eagles won Special Teams Player of the Week. Darren Sproles won in Weeks 4 and Week 10 as well. So there is something to special teams. There absolutely is. It's an X factor, and you need those tangential X factors to sometimes win games. If you look, you take away those special teams touchdowns from a couple of those games, this team is not challenging for the division title. They're looking maybe at the wild card or looking at .500 to be even a bit more honest. So Coach Phipp gets plenty. He deserves a lot of credit for what he's doing, our special teams coach, on that side of the ball. Okay, so we've talked about special teams enough for this show. No, we haven't. Cody Parkey, name dropped him at the end of last week.
Yeah, there you go.
He only went 5 of 6, you know, kicking this week. Missed one from, I believe it was 49 out, but you know what? We won't hold it against you. I'm telling you, he's making a case for being Pro Bowl kicker. He really
is. He's perfect 50 and above.
Yeah, and that's key. For our rookie, he has ice in his veins, and that could be we'll see how much of that ice remains frozen when he goes down to the Big D for tomorrow's game. That's going to be
the test. We might need that. That might just be the determiner.
It very well may be. Weigh in with your thoughts on the special teams unit, how impressed you are, if we're making too much of it even. 347-826-9964, 347 826-9964. Brandon's in the chat. Is that Uncle Mark as well in there?
If I'm not mistaken.
Uncle Mark, shout out to Uncle Mark. Happy Thanksgiving to you two guys. Happy Thanksgiving in advance also to all of you as well. Hopefully it's a healthy, happy one and one where the Eagles win while you're eating your turkey, turducken, or in the case of Frat House Mike, tofurkey.
What? No, not I. Not I.
Not I, said the McShane. Okay.
No way.
Another revelation, let's say, from the Eagles' victory against Tennessee Sunday is LeSean McCoy can actually still run the football. And I say that somewhat half-heartedly because look who we faced, number one. I believe the second or maybe the worst rushing defense in the National Football League.
Yep.
21 carries, 130 yards and a touchdown. Sproles got a touchdown as well. Do you look at that performance and do you see it as simply put a motivational booster, a morale booster for him, considering he just went back to the old school, old way, beating up the ever-loving tar and feather out of a would-be one-legged man in a butt-kicking contest in Tennessee?
Wow. There was a lot of imagery in that.
Yes, there was. Well, I'm trying to say I'll simplify it because I tend to be verbose. Is there anything we can take out of that performance? No, I guess not.
Okay. I thought there was more.
Here's another question, Williams.
Let me put it to you this way, and this is where this is where I'm going to be honest with you. I'm watching the game, and this is exactly what I was thinking as I'm watching it, and I'm seeing them put together a game plan where they put 164 yards on the ground. And I'm saying to myself, okay, why couldn't we do this last week? Why couldn't we do this the week before? Both of the two teams that we played the two previous weeks prior to Tennessee didn't have much better rushing defenses than what we saw from Tennessee, I think, with the 31st. I think they have the 31st rushing defense.
They came in with the 31st, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Right. So why couldn't we do it there? And what I came away with was I'm saying to myself, okay, this was Chip Kelly – dusting off a couple of plays that he figured he better get in there because the fan base was absolutely going to crucify him if we had one more game where we didn't have a rushing ground game. That was my thinking. Do I come away with this, looking at this, going, wow, LeSean McCoy's back? No, I don't. Because we've seen this year where didn't he have a good game against, what was it, the Giants? And then we go two or three games in a row where, you know, we're right back to 1.8, 2.1 yards per carry. Great. Yeah. I love it. Listen, I'm thrilled that he had a game like this, 130 yards, a touchdown, 6.2 yards an average. I think that's fantastic. God knows we're going to need that tomorrow. Boy, I sure hope it's there, but I'm going to tell you right now, I can't say I'm necessarily confident.
Yeah, I'm a bit suspect as well. I mean, it was nice to see, no question about it. But you're facing a defense that, and we'll talk about this when Jordan joins us in about 15 minutes' time, that is much better by far and away against the run than the Tennessee Titans were. I still maintain it's a mental thing. It's funny. Before the game, I was taking a look on Philly.com for some article information and some reading material pregame-wise, and I saw a poll listed saying, "Would you want LeSean McCoy back in the backfield next year?" Something like 58% or 59% of Eagles fans who voted in there said no; they would rather not have him in the backfield at the rate he was playing.
Right,
and it's pretty damning of him. It's pretty ruling, if you will, for the fans on the way he's been playing as of late. This is a statement game for LeSean McCoy coming up tomorrow on Thanksgiving Day. If he wants to prove his worth with this team, if he wants to prove I can still be the big game back that you wanted me to be, he's got to perform. You can't make excuses with the offensive line right now because you've got four-fifths of the offensive line doing their thing now, four-fifths of the crew that was available last year. So that's not it. You can't fall back on that now. It's on you at this point in time. Now, let's talk about another.
McCoy put a target on his back, not just across the league, okay, mm-hmm. but from his own fan base. when
oh sure
he when pre season he made the pronouncement that he was going to do 2,000 yards. Okay, yeah. Who'd have thunk that 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, we would have heard the conversations taking place in Philadelphia sports social media, in Philadelphia sports talk radio, about potentially trading this guy in the offseason? Who would have thought it? And boy, oh boy, you know, not that I want to mix apples and oranges, Jim, but I know that this is going to ring real loud and true to you. If hearing those conversations and those rumors didn't sound so much like one first baseman over there with the Philadelphia Phillies, I don't know what does.
Yeah, exactly. Very reminiscent of the Ryan Howard situation with the Phillies across the street at Citizens Bank Park, no question about it. And we shall see. Hopefully McCoy doesn't bog down and break his Achilles on us or something like that. But let's see what happens tomorrow. Let's hope he hasn't had too much tryptophan injected into his turkey, and hopefully he'll get going and get the motor running and what have you. I want to talk about another back. A quarterback. It's time for the weekly Sanchez Report, ladies and gentlemen. And this one is a mixed bag. Gee, aren't they all anymore? 26 of 44, 59% completion percentage, 346 yards. We like that. Two touchdowns, two picks, a QBR of 80.3. I keep saying to myself, and the one thing that keeps matriculating in my mind after what we've seen from Sanchez is, he's no different than Nick Foles when you get right down to it. Okay, yes, he can work the tempo offense faster, but statistically, he's not really any better or worse, for that matter, in some respects, than Nick Foles.
You got pluses, you got minuses, you got trade-offs, basically, is what you've got, Jim. Let's just look at the numbers for a moment.
Sure.
62% completion rate versus Nick Foles, 59.8. You're right. It's probably negligible. We're getting more yards per attempt on Mark Sanchez's completions. Right now, based on the number of snaps and the amount of time he's had, number of TDs is comparable. Interceptions are way up over what, not way up, but
noticeably up.
Yes, over from what we saw from Nick Foles. You got pluses, you got minuses. Question I would ask any Eagles fan right now, who do you have more confidence with?
I'm sorry to interrupt before you give your answer. You're going to find if you ask Eagles fans that question, they're just going to look at you, stare you blank in the face and say, I don't know. I think that because you see, I mean, like you said, it's trade-offs. Sanchez can throw the deep ball better than Nick Foles. There's no question about it. But by the same token, he also turns the ball over way more. Yes. And we're not just talking the INTs. We're talking fumbles as well.
Yep.
What's your take?
What I like is this. Here's what I like. I like the fact he can go under center. I like the fact he can play the shotgun. I like the fact he's got a little bit more mobility than Nick Foles does. He has a much quicker release on the ball. I am willing to trade right now. Because let's get this one straight. We talked about this weeks ago when we knew that Mark Sanchez was going to be taking over for perhaps maybe the rest of this season. And we knew that he was going to be taking us through the most difficult part of the schedule. I said, look, just get ready for it. For every touchdown he throws, get ready. You're going to get an interception. And we can only hope that the rest of the team doesn't allow that interception to turn into points against. So I'm willing to compromise the interceptions, so long as my team can hold up their end, for the mobility that you get with Sanchez, for the quicker release, and for all of those kinds of just, I just think that Sanchez works better this, you know, Chip Kelly offense. I hate to use that phrase because I think it's actually become somewhat hackneyed, but in this kind of, what did you refer to it as on Sunday morning on the program? You referred to it as the when you were on down there.
I refer to it as the tempo offense.
Tempo offense, correct. I like that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. One thing, let me ask you this. This is a little bit of a sidetrack thing. I don't know if you were watching NFL Network this morning, but they were talking, of course, the big story around the league this Wednesday is Robert Griffin III being demoted from his starting quarterback status in Washington. Jamie Dukes was on there. And he said he wouldn't be surprised if Chip Kelly made a call down the DC way to RG3 to see about picking him up, saying that RG3 would be a better fit in this offense than either Foles or Sanchez. Your thoughts on that comment? Do you lend any credence to that, or is that just a little bit hyperbolic for you?
No, not at all. I agree with that. I'll tell you where it makes me a little bit nervous is I'm not sure. I hate to say this, but I'm not sure RG3 isn't done. That's my
concern.
I don't think he's ever really come back from the injury he suffered. What was it? The end of last season, the season before.
Yeah, the season before, and where he ended up missing the whole season because of the poor diagnosis. That's the best way I'm going to put it.
Yep, and I'm just not. That's where I'm a little bit nervous about it. Do I think that a 100% RG3 would be a better option for the Jim Williams tempo offense than Mark Sanchez?
It's my offense now, everybody.
Exactly. Well, Chip doesn't want any credit for it. Remember, I mean, he comes out, he says all the time, he says, it's not my offense, stop calling it my offense.
Yeah.
But do I think that RG3 would be a better option to Sanchez or Foles? Yeah, I do.
Something to think about. I'll tell you one thing we need to look at for options. Maybe bringing in some high school football players right after their high school rivalry game to play defense. Because the Eagles' defense was completely Jekyll and Hyde Sunday.
Yeah,
they gave up close to 400 yards total on offense, and really not over 60 minutes, really over 45 minutes, because they contained the living bleep out of the Titans in the first quarter, held them to like 15 yards offensively, maybe a little less than that. 52 yards against the ground game of Bishop Sankey, held the fort down there. But they got burned big time on the long ball, 345 yards. It goes back to how suspect the Titans, or rather the Eagles secondary was. Tell you what, we'll come back to that in a moment because I think we have our guest joining us right now. From the 817, is this Jordan?
Yes, it is.
There we go.
All right. Let me give you a proper introduction then.
Okay.
Joining us from is our special guest at this point in time from CowboysHQ.com. He is a contributor there. He's a writer. I've read some of his stuff. It's really, really good. And he's a brave man for coming over here to talk on an Eagles-oriented internet radio show. We welcome Jordan Ross inside the War Nest. Good evening. Happy Thanksgiving. How are you?
Happy Thanksgiving to you. I'm doing good. How are y'all doing?
Real good.
We're doing all right. Some of us have snow going on. Some of us have rain, but it's all freaking cold here. That's all I can tell you. But
it's good weather down here, y'all. The Eagles should have some good football weather whenever they come on down.
Oh, yeah. It seems to be like that. And let me start right now talking about the buildup to this game. Something I'll bring up to Mike a little later on in the show. Jerry Jones recently on NFL Network saying this is probably the biggest Thanksgiving game that Dallas has ever seen. What's the mood like? What's the atmosphere down there heading into tomorrow's game?
I mean, there's definitely a lot of excitement. Cowboy fans haven't really experienced much success over the last few years, as you probably know. So, now at 8-3, we've already gotten as many wins as they had each of the last three seasons. So the fact that they have a chance to get that ninth win that they have had so much trouble getting over the last few years is definitely exciting.
Well, that raises the question, I should say. Do Cowboys fans really believe this is the year? We're going to avoid the late November, December swoon. Tony Romo will not fall on his backside or throw for 500 yards in a game and also have that crucial pick that costs them a game. Is this the year they get over the hump, over 500? Is that what Cowboys fans are really believing, or is there still that little seed of doubt in some of their minds?
You know, I think a few of them still have that, are a little bit skeptical just because it's been so long since this team has had any sort of success. And However, you know, we've always had some good players. Romo's always performed at a high level. Dez is good. So we've seen this before. So some fans aren't really sure if they can buy in completely. But, the feel I've gotten from most fans down here is the fact that I think most fans are optimistic. I don't think any fans, at least realistic fans, think that they're going to go win the Super Bowl this year. But I think, I think that fans are optimistic that they can, at least, win 10 games, get into the playoffs, maybe win a playoff game.
Wow.
I think the overall vibe is pretty optimistic.
Another thing I wanted to bring up is going back, both of us coming off of short weeks, both of our respective teams, yours technically slightly shorter. You're literally, as soon as you're done Monday night, Sunday night football, you're flying right back down to Irving, Texas and Arlington and what have you. What's the big takeaway you had from such a close game against the division foe in the New York Giants? What's the biggest takeaway you saw from Dallas's performance on Sunday night?
I think their resiliency. I think the Cowboys teams of 2011, 2012, 2013, I don't know if they had the willpower and the, confidence and swagger that they needed in order to pull out that win. You know, there was a few mistakes early on. They fell behind, and they were able to, keep grinding it out and ended up coming away with the win. So I think this is a tougher overall team mentally and physically than the Cowboys in recent years have been.
Jordan, this is Mike McShane. Let me ask you, I was over on Cowboys, DallasCowboys.com yesterday, and one of the articles that was over there indicated that, and let me see if I can phrase this correctly, but it certainly gave the impression that one of the things the Cowboys are a little more concerned about coming into tomorrow, I guess the big thing, would be Jeremy Maclin. Is it Maclin, or would it be somebody like Sproles, or what? What is it that they would be most concerned about with this Eagles team?
You know, I think Maclin is definitely a concern. He's had a great year, and the Cowboys, while overall on defense they've been, light years better than they were last year, they're, I think, the 16th ranked overall unit now, and last year they were 32nd. So they've gotten a lot better overall, but the secondary, especially the corners, still concern me a little bit, Brandon Carr in particular. But what I am most concerned about is the Eagles' special teams and Darren Sproles, back there returning punts, especially considering the fact that the Cowboys will be without their leading special teams tackler, Jeff Heath, who will miss at least this game, or he's doubtful, but he should miss a couple weeks with a broken thumb. So they're a little banged up on special teams and haven't really been that great in that area this year. So they'll have to figure out a way to slow Sproles down.
I think there are a few right now that are there are a few people right now that don't believe, pardon my double negative, that this will be a high-scoring game. Right now, I think the over-under on this last I saw was like 55.5. The two teams match up fairly evenly offensively. Eagles are ranked number 4 overall. Dallas ranked number 6. My question is, could this actually come down to something on the defensive side of the ball? In which case, I think I've got to give the nod a little bit to the Dallas Cowboys.
I think so, too. You know, this defense, they have improved in a lot of areas, but one of the main areas is the fact that they've taken advantage of opportunities whenever opposing quarterbacks make a mistake, if they throw a bad ball or a ball gets tipped or someone, they've done a better job of knocking the ball loose. They're definitely going after the ball a lot and creating turnovers. So, with Mark Sanchez, he's been serviceable in Nick Foles' absence, but he's still, thrown two interceptions in three of the last four games. He'll have to be on his A game. This Dallas defense isn't, Seattle's defense of 2013 by any means, but they definitely make the most of their opportunities. So I think, as do the Eagles, who have a lot of turnovers this year as well. So I think both teams will kind of have to be on their A game because, both of these defenses are definitely capable of making some plays.
Does the three-point line surprise you, Jordan? I mean, I would have thought that perhaps maybe Dallas would have been favored a little bit more than that.
I think it's probably pretty accurate. It's probably pretty accurate because, you know, one, it's a division game, and on such a short week, I think both teams may be, a little bit exhausted, maybe a little bit worn out. It'll probably be, you know, a really hard-fought game on both sides. So, and also the last few Thanksgiving games that the Cowboys have played in have been pretty close. So I'd say it's a pretty accurate spread.
Real quick for you, one last one I just want to throw at you real quick, Jordan. Listen, I'm probably older than my voice sounds. I've been following the Eagles-Cowboys rivalry for decades. We up here in Philadelphia, I think, at least myself, speaking for myself, I view the Cowboys as the biggest rival in the NFC East, our biggest rival. Do the Cowboys view it that way? Because one of the things I've heard is that the Cowboys actually view the Redskins.
I heard that too earlier this year whenever the Cowboys and Redskins played, and I think the Redskins think of the Cowboys as the biggest rival, but I don't think it's really the other way around, maybe for some of the older fans. But a lot of the most fans that I've talked to, I think that the main NFC rivalry is between either the Cowboys and Eagles or Cowboys and Giants. But,
okay.
Yeah.
Talking with Jordan Ross from CowboysHQ.com, a fellow Scout.com site here on Inside the War Nest. Jim Williams, Mike McShane with you. You mentioned Mark Sanchez. In your estimation, do the Cowboys have to prepare for Mark Sanchez any differently than they would for Nick Foles?
No, I don't think so. I think they can do some things pretty similarly. I think Nick Foles is a overall better quarterback, but you know, Mark Sanchez has shown the ability to make some plays. He has a pretty strong arm on him, and if you give him time in the pocket, you know, he can make the right throws. So I think the key is to get pressure. I think the Cowboys defense needs to key in on trying to at least slow down McCoy and Scholes on the ground and try to force Sanchez to to air it out a little bit more and get pressure on him. I think regardless of who's at quarterback, their main priority on defense is to get pressure.
On the other end of things, let's talk about the Dallas offense for a second, and it lives and breathes, not so much through Tony Romo, though he's having a phenomenal season. It's DeMarco Murray. He's threatening to go for 2,000 yards this season. The question I have for you is kind of counterculture to what you might think here. He's been running the ball like crazy, the leading runner in the NFL. Are they overusing DeMarco Murray? Is there a fear that, you know, maybe they should let off the accelerator a little bit?
You know, I've heard that a lot from some Cowboy fans down here, but I don't think so, because I think, you know, at this point there's such a – this division race with the Eagles is so close. It'll, you know, likely come down to the last one or two games. And, you know, the Cowboys can't really afford to slow down at all. They need to keep their foot on the gas. And Murray does have some injury history. But, you know, whatever he did this offseason, it seems to be working out for him, because he's running as strong and powerful as ever right now. And, I think they got to keep going. And I think they trust their offensive line enough that if Murray does go down, that they can plug in Joseph Randall or Lance Dunbar, call Ryan Williams up from the practice squad, and that they can have, similar success. You know, maybe not this the kind of numbers Murray's having, but that this offensive line is good enough to, you know, put another running back there and still have some success on the ground.
Yeah, and I was going to say, Jordan, you're right now, I mean, Tony Romo is having a career season, it appears. I mean, right now he's ranked number two. He's ranked number two in the league in QB rating. Your fan base has got to be loving this.
Yeah, I mean, he's definitely having a phenomenal year. You know, every year he's usually in the top 10 or even 5 quarterback statistically, and he's always put up big numbers. And one of the knocks is, you know, every now and then he'll throw some interceptions or, you know, have a 19 interception year. But he, you know, has always put up big numbers, and I think the big difference is this offensive line. I think, because he's playing like he always has. It's just now – he doesn't have to do it on his own. He has this help around him. He has a consistent running game. He has a play caller who sticks with the running game, even if there's a couple bad drives where they're not getting much, he stays with it, even if they go down. And, they're giving him, if you saw the game on Sunday against the Giants, had 8 seconds, 7 seconds in the pockets on each throw. So, you know, the fact that he has all that time back there, you know, if you give him that kind of time, and also the fact that the defense is a little better too. They're getting off the field on third down more, and they're creating turnovers, and now that he has this help around him, he can just kind of relax and sit back there and, you know, do his things.
Yeah, I don't mind saying it made me sick.
Oh, yeah.
I figured. Try not to hide your emotions here, Michael.
Yeah.
I just got to say, it ticked me off a little bit. I mean, you know, he's standing back there. He could bake a cake, for God's sake.
Yeah, exactly.
Exactly. Let me ask you
another
question.
I have a question for y'all, if you don't mind.
Yeah, sure, go ahead.
Okay, you're going to have to remind me of his name. Bernie, the defensive lineman who was saying the Cowboys' offensive line isn't that great.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Eagle. Who was that again?
I read it, and I don't even remember who said it. That's pretty bad.
It's the Eagles' nose tackle.
Right.
I was just wondering what y'all think of that, and if the Eagles are kind of overlooking this Cowboys offensive line.
Logan who said it.
Benny Logan. That's right. Yeah.
Well, yeah, I don't think that they're overlooking it. Can I tell you? We as fans up here, we read that and we just love it. And I think that some of that is those guys playing to the fans. That's what I think it is. I think it's a little bit of gamesmanship. And I think it goes on more here in Philadelphia probably than what you see down there in Dallas. That's my gut feeling.
Yeah, especially with Garrett here. He actually tells his players to be, be quick, be polite, and be boring in their responses to the media.
That way you don't end up like Marshawn Lynch and get fined $100,000. So
exactly. So I don't think fans are really reading too much into what Benny Logan said. But yeah, I was just wondering if what the feel is out there with the Cowboys offensive line, if they were overlooking it. But it does make sense just having a little bit of fun.
I think having a little bit of fun is what it is. Yeah. Go ahead, Mike.
Yeah, I was gonna say you got to know the Philadelphia fans. I mean, you know what we're like.
We just
feed off of that crap.
Yeah.
And we've gone through hell on the offensive line, too. So, obviously, we don't want to be first to cast stones on that front because we've already been through this year with everybody and their sister going down on the offensive line and then some. We're just now getting to some semblance of what our starting line should have been. So, speaking of the offensive line and speaking of the Dallas offense, I wanted to ask you this because everybody, of course, is going to be looking at Dez Bryant at Weapon X as the guy to contain. In my opinion, I think the X factor for you guys be Jason Witten because the Eagles have been burned regularly this season by tight ends, opposing tight ends.
Yeah.
Do you expect Jason Witten to have a big game? Will he need to have a big game, I should say, for Dallas to be victorious?
I don't know if he'll have to have a huge game or anything, but I think that I think Witten will – he usually has pretty good games against the Eagles. He's had some of his most impressive games against them. You know, I'm sure you remember the helmet being ripped off. And I think that Witten has to have a decent game, especially if it is a close game. Witten needs to be Romo's security blanket like he has been throughout his career. Just be there, be ready to catch those, third and medium, third and short passes and the event that they need to make a game-winning drive and, just be reliable and get open and do what he's done.
Let me stay on that for one moment, just on the Jason Witten thing. Jordan, let me ask you a question. Has it become obvious to you or is it just me? Witten doesn't seem to be as big a part of the game plan as he used to be.
I've heard that actually a lot this season, and I don't think it's the fact that they're not utilizing him in their game plan as much. I think it's the fact that they are more committed to the run, because Jason Witten is actually the top-rated run-blocking tight end this season, where they're putting him back there a little bit more to block for DeMarco Murray And but then, you know, you see him when he does go out in the passing game, he's been as consistent as ever. So I think it's just the fact that it's not as much them not using Witten as much. They're just using him in a different way.
Okay. Mm. More in the blocking end than the receiving end. All right, fair enough.
Yeah. Not dissimilar from what we've seen with Celek this year.
That's true.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, until Sanchez came back, and then, oh, Celek's the number one tight end again. Zach Ertz has kind of fallen off the radar a little bit. Let me put you against the grind here. We always ask the people who join us for a prediction. It's the big game. It's Eagles Cowboys, first of two games in less than 2 weeks. Give me a prediction. How do you see this one shaking down?
You know, because the Cowboys are at home, and I'm gonna have to be a homer here and pick the Cowboys. But I do think it's going to be a close one, like the spread says. I think it'll be something like, you know, 28-24 or 27-24. And I think that Sanchez will throw a late pick. That's what I'm calling.
Oh, no butt fumbles, though, so I can take that, I guess.
No, yeah, no butt fumbles.
No butt fumbles. No butt fumbles, no whammies, none of that stuff. Exactly.
Well, we'll try not to hold that against you, Jordan. You know
we
what I
won't.
Mean?
Wait a minute. Well, yeah. You know, you're with CowboysHQ.com for goodness sakes. Speaking of which,
yeah, exactly.
For people who are Eagles fans or Cowboys fans listening in who want to go, in our case, behind enemy lines and learn more about what's going on with the team's preparations, tell us a little bit about what you've got up on the website right now.
On CowboysHQ, we have, I have an article up there, the four keys to the game for the Dallas Cowboys if they want to beat the Eagles. That we have, weekly breakdowns of practice. We have pretty much anything and everything Cowboys related. We cover any Cowboys related events, post game analysis, pretty much anything that anyone wants to know about the Cowboys, they can find there.
All right, good stuff. CowboysHQ.com. We have a question in from our chat room.
Yep.
Let me bring this up. It's from our buddy Uncle Mark. He asks, is there a sentiment in the Big D that the Sanchez Eagles are more beatable than last year's Foles' Eagles?
Ooh, that's tough. I don't know if there's really a sentiment that they're more beatable than the Foles' Eagles, but I think fans would rather face Mark Sanchez and Nick Foles just for the fact that he, hasn't, Mark Sanchez, you know, he's just not on the same level as Nick Foles, talent-wise. So,
wow.
You know, I think they'd rather face Mark Sanchez, but the Eagles still have plenty of weapons, and, you know, they have a defense that creates turnovers. They make huge plays on special teams. They have, what is it, 9 or 10 return touchdowns this year? So, I think as long as they have a quarterback back there that can, you know, make some throws and be smart with the football, even if he does make a few mistakes, they have enough talent around them that they can make up for it. So I wouldn't necessarily say that they're more beatable.
If I can speak for you, Jordan, it sounds like what you've said this evening, it might come down to one of two or both things, special teams and maybe defense.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a fair assessment, I think, too.
I think so, too.
Now, see, Jordan, we aren't so bad. We're not.
No.
We're not throwing snowballs at you.
Battery filled snowballs.
No, if he was in my backyard,
no,
I got plenty of snow.
Don't say that. Spread it down. Spread the word down to the people there in the Metroplex. We're not as mean as we come off. Those are just the drunk inebriated ones. Okay, that's all I'm saying.
I actually had an old manager who was an Eagles fan, and he was a good guy. We were good friends, so I don't have too much of a problem with Eagles fans.
Good deal, good deal. We don't have a problem with you. We'd love to have you back on, and we maybe in 2 weeks' time when we face each other again at the link.
Yep.
Yeah, definitely.
All right. Well, you've got our contact. We've got yours. We'll be in touch. Thank you, Jordan.
Sounds good. Thank you for having me on.
Happy Thanksgiving, Jordan.
Happy Thanksgiving.
You too.
All right, take care now.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
That's Jordan Ross from CowboysHQ.com.
Good
and check out the website. I was on it today, and the keys, I think, are very, very accurate. One of them he mentions, time of possession, which is something the Eagles, as I mentioned when talking Sunday morning with Greg Arias there at 102.5 The Game in Nashville, it's a game that the Eagles are never going to win. They will never win the time of possession game under Chip Kelly. It's what you do in the time, and that's something to take a look at, too. Again, CowboysHQ.com, FellowScout.com website. Check it out to get behind enemy lines.
Just
and
out of curiosity,
thanks to Jordan Ross.
Yeah, just out of curiosity, Jim, when you're bringing up what they had up there on their website vis-a-vis time of possession, were they talking about the fact that Dallas actually rules that versus over the Eagles?
Yeah, more or less. They were saying that was one of the biggest keys, and that it's they know how to grind the football and sustain longer drives of 11 or 12 or 13 plays.
It as you've pointed out, I don't know if you could necessarily say that's a plus for Dallas, because when you take a look at, for instance, points for, when you take a look at the number of touchdowns, the Philadelphia Eagles are beating the Dallas Cowboys in both of those. So the fact that they might, in fact, control the clock better than the Philadelphia Eagles is an irrelevant stat when it comes to the scoreboard.
It can be. I'll put it to you that way. It's all about time and situations in the game. If they're controlling the ball in the final 5-6 minutes of a half or of the game, then it absolutely is advantageous to them if they're in a position where they can take the lead. But otherwise, I would agree with you. It can go either way. It's something of note for sure. We're going to talk about the defense, and we can kind of segue that into talking about Dallas as well, because we talked about with Jordan the weapons that Dallas has. You've got Murray out of the backfield. You've got Dez throw up the X Bryant. You've got Witten, who I think truly is going to have a good game tomorrow afternoon. He's going to need to if Dallas wants to win against Philadelphia. The Eagles secondary, if they gave up almost 350 yards, give or take, to Tennessee, and they're not nearly as deep offensively, they've got to make some changes, some wholesale changes here in schemes and what have you, if they're going to come out and play gangbusters against Dallas, especially now that Emmanuel Acho also is likely going to be missing this game. I'll get to the official injury report in a moment, but what do you do on secondaries or Philadelphia here?
This is a tough question.
Loaded question, I know.
Yeah, well, see, and this is where I liked kind of where Jordan was coming from, because I think he really narrowed it down. I think, and that, yeah, I might have given myself away a little bit there when I said to him, I said, this might come down to a defensive game, and in which case, then I think I might have to give the nod to the Cowboys when it comes to the defense. Not so much the rushing defense, because there, Dallas and the Eagles are pretty close. Dallas is ranked 13th, we're ranked 16th. We can shut the rush down. We've got a good defensive line in that defensive front there that can close a team down. We've done it before. It's in that secondary area. Now, here, I have to give the edge a little bit to the Eagles' weapons versus the Dallas Cowboys' weapons. The Eagles have more of them. Mm-hmm. Dallas doesn't have as many. So if we can find a way to cover the few that they've got that are a real threat, that gives us a little bit more of a fighting chance.
And you bring up an excellent point talking about the number of weapons. I mean, they have the bigger name weapons, let's say.
Yes, yes.
But the Eagles, as we saw against Tennessee, they can throw to anyone, and anyone. One time it'll be Matthews. Then next play it could be Macklin. Then it could be Cooper. More on Cooper in a moment. He'll be I'll give him the business. And then you could get Celek or Ertzen on the action or Huff. There is a depth difference, a major difference in depth between Philadelphia and Dallas offensively.
And I think that gives the Eagles, obviously it gives the Eagles offense that little bit extra wrinkle. That little bit extra look, it's going to be dependent upon the Eagles' secondary defense to make sure that they are covering those, as I said, those ones that they think. Now, that's where you might be right, Jim, that Witten will end up playing a bigger role than, say, somebody like a Dez Bryant. Because if we're out there putting all of our attention on Bryant, well, then obviously that's going to leave some other places open.
That's been the MO of this defense over the years, the last 2 years. So
you might have a really good point there with the whole Witten situation. Witten might actually step up and have a really good game. For all the fantasy managers out there that might be listening, it might be something you want to think about.
absolutely, and I would consider it. In fact, I have him on one of my fantasy teams. I'm not
sure
if it's one for your league or Justin's league, but I'll have to check that out. Speaking of things to check out, time for the injuries. Time's yours.
There you go.
As we all know, Nick Foles out for indefinitely or indeterminably, I guess. The big injury front, Emmanuel Acho for Cumberland. I'm thinking of a college again. For Philadelphia, a groin injury. He's listed currently as questionable. He was limited to practice all week, so we'll see if he gets into action Thanksgiving Day. If he's unable to go, it'll probably be Casey Matthews, so I say this with no reservations whatsoever. Emmanuel, get well. Please.
All right, now back up. He did all right the one game where he was actually calling the numbers. So I'm not. Let's not bust his chops too badly.
Okay, and who was the opponent in that one game?
Yeah, well, who was it? By the way, help me out here. Was it the Panthers?
Yeah. Well, okay. Again, Emmanuel, get better.
Okay.
That's all I'm saying. For Dallas, Jack Crawford, as we was mentioned, is out with a thumb injury. Tyler Patman, knee and ankle issues, he's out. Dakota Watson, linebacker with a hamstring, he's out. Safety Jeff Heath, we mentioned that. He and Crawford have pretty much the same sort of thumb injury. They both had surgery on Tuesday, yet Heath is listed as doubtful, which means there's about a 20 to 25% chance he plays. If he's going to play with a broken thumb, that man has onions. Let me just tell you that right now, because that hurts. That hurts mm-hmm. like heck. And then a whole list of probables, including Tony Romo, who didn't practice at all Monday, but that's because he was just a few hours removed from a game, so take nothing of that. So that's a look at the injuries heading into to play. One other thing I wanted to hit on, and let me go back in here and double-check it. Let's look at the matchups here. Tony Romo, you mentioned it with Jordan. He's having a phenomenal year, and I'm going to defend the man because he does not get the credit he deserves because
I agree with you.
He's always the guy who throws that interception. I mean, you go back to the game against, well, the game last year against nobody in particular from Denver.
Man crush. Man crush.
Where it was a shootout, 51-48 or 51-49, something like that, and Romo had himself a career day, except for the interception he threw in the final 2 minutes of the fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. He's always going to have that stigma around him that he's the quarterback that can't win the big one, but he's one of the best quarterbacks right now in the National Football League. How does Philadelphia try to handle him? Can they get to him with that offensive line in place? Can they pressure him like they have other quarterbacks this season?
They've handled him before. I think the difference is going to be, as Jordan pointed out, you know, look, the offensive line there does look a whole heck of a lot better. I was just checking mm-hmm. what his sack numbers are. He has been sacked 20 times so far this season in, 10 games, 11 games. So,
which isn't bad, really.
No, it's not. It's not.
To a game.
But it's not the lowest in the league either. Where I think the offensive line has helped him has been in potentially in cutting down on the number of interceptions. It's giving him more time to be able to check down and scan the field. So he's being able to find his secondary receivers, and he's not throwing the ball up wildly. So I think that that's probably where the offensive line has helped him the most mm-hmm. is in cutting down on the number of interceptions.
In just a few
Excuse
moments,
me.
We'll be... Yep, go ahead. I'm sorry, you were
Excuse
going to
me, I was going to say, you know, look, we've all pointed out what Connor Barwin has been up to this past season.
Absolutely.
Yeah, the guy's a pro bowler. And you know, you're going to be looking to somebody like him to be leading that defensive attack against Tony Romo. Don't mm-hmm. be surprised. I think Tony Romo is going to get knocked around in this game. He may even be sacked more in this game than others that we have that he's done it in. But I don't know if that, Jim, as we've talked about, and we've broken this down now pretty precisely. We've looked at it from just about every angle. I don't know if that is necessarily going to be the difference.
Yeah, I mean, it's the MO of this defense to pressure the quarterback, not necessarily sack the quarterback. And we've seen them bring the hounds without bringing the blitz. This is a team that, you know, none like, God rest his soul, the Jim Johnson teams of years ago would blitz you like crazy. This isn't an Eagles team that blitzes too often. Should they maybe try to blitz Romo and get him uncomfortable?
The blitz scares me with the Eagles, and I'll tell you why.
Yeah.
Because as soon as you do, you expose your secondary.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
That's true.
So you really can't blitz. The best you can do is pressure up front, and the Eagles have done a very, very good job of that, of pressuring opposing quarterbacks without, as you point out, necessarily getting back there and sacking them. If you can flush them out of the pocket and move it, all right, now you've got a possibility. But I don't want to see this Eagles team blitzing too much because that's when they're getting burnt for the long ball.
Very valid concerns. In just a few minutes, we're going to give our much-awaited, much-anticipated predictions for this game.
Yep.
And we're also going to go back into the time machine, and you'll appreciate this more than I because I was all of 5 years old and don't remember
well,
much about
it. Well, I got to tell you, I was talking about this game actually just this evening right here at the frat house over dinner.
The Bounty Bowl, yeah.
And I said, I remember where I was. I remember having dinner that Thanksgiving evening. This game very, very well, that 1989 game 25 years ago.
And I want to hear those stories in just a few minutes, definitely. But, you know, since, by the way, last week's show, we thank you all for listening. It was the most listened to edition of Inside the War Nest in the 5 weeks previously we had done this, and we thank you for that so much. And one of the reasons I think it was the most listened to was a little segment we came up with on the fly, literally a few minutes before the show started, a little thing called Is This Anything?
Is This Anything?
No, we're not David Letterman, and no, you're not Paul Schaefer. You're not from Thunder Bay, Ontario, are you? No, didn't think so. We're going to take a look at some of the interesting stories from off the field of play leading up to the game Thursday, and I will question Mike McShane on if these stories are anything consequential we should be worried about. And we've alluded to this first one already, so let's just put it right out there and in the open. You've probably noticed that Riley Cooper is not nearly as big a threat of the offense as he was this time last year. Probably because he can't be trusted to catch a ball, but he can be trusted to tip one into a defender's hands for an interception. Earlier this week, Cooper talked to the media about the playing time of teammate wide receiver Jeremy Maclin, saying, quote, "Macklin's trying to get a contract, so he's probably not going to try and come out of the game," end quote. Maclin responded saying, quote, "That was not a very smart thing for Coop to say," end quote. Cooper downplayed it, saying he was just joking about the matter, but the facts are the facts. Maclin, I believe the stats I saw from the Philly.com article, say that he's been involved in 84% of the snaps from scrimmage, while Cooper's maybe closer to 70%. So the comments from a one Riley Cooper, I ask you, Mike McShane.
Well, I'm going to be honest with you. They could be, Jim. I'm going to preface it this way. I have read over the past 2 days numerous other talking head sports analysts here in the Philadelphia region who have said, "Oh, it's a lot to do about nothing." I won't name who those analysts are, but somehow or another, I'm going to be honest with you. Listen, all you had to do was hear Macklin's retort back to it when he was asked about it. He wasn't very happy. This contention from Cooper that in fact there's like this four player progression rotation sort of thing, or some sort of scheme that Chip Kelly's got set up, and well, Maclin doesn't go along with it, and all this other. Listen, with all due respect, does Maclin have any right to be making the comments he's making at all? I mean, the guy got his payday last year. Really, when it comes right down to it. Thanks to the fact that Maclin wasn't there.
Yeah. I mean, if Maclin wasn't healthy, or if Maclin was healthy, Cooper would not be on this team this year.
He wouldn't have gotten anywhere near the looks that he got last year.
Right. And Cooper wouldn't be on the team this year, stemming from all that fun stuff he did at a country music concert over the summer, if you ask me. But, yeah, I think this could be something as well. I'm not going to say let's hit the panic button and let's start, putting people against each other here, but it could lead to dissension. It could lead to a little bit of dissension, and dare I say the J word, jealousy? Oh, he's getting all the looks. I'm not getting anything. Well, like I said in the preamble to it, he's not getting as many looks because he can't catch the damn ball, okay? Cooper is having a bad year this year. He's probably fourth on the pecking order right now, fifth on the pecking order, maybe.
No doubt about it. Well, he should have been from the beginning. Bigger question, though, Jim, I throw to you.
Yeah.
Do the Eagles sign Macklin for a big number?
Oh, that segues very nicely to the next question I was going to ask you. So I'm going to dodge the question and throw it back at you in this manner because there's a sidebar to this. Speaking of Macklin, he is in a contract year. He most recently, late last week, terminated the deal with his agents Ben Dogra and Jim Steiner. So Macklin is a free agent in more than one way, if you will. As we broadcast, he is now free to sign with any agent, but he hasn't done so yet. So the fact that he's in a contract year and the fact that he changed agents, Michael McShane is... Hit the button. Come on.
The fan doesn't want to play.
Letterman wants residuals, I guess. Go ahead.
Thank you, BTR. Listen, I've had that problem here myself. Is it anything? Can I be honest with you? I think here's my gut feeling on it. I think Macklin's going to test the waters.
Mm.
That's what I think.
Mm-hmm.
Because look, I always kind of felt that the Eagles probably should have extended them anyhow. I didn't really like the way that they handled it for this year. And I have a sneaky suspicion there might be a little bit of, he's not too pleased with it either. So,
a little animosity between all parties there is what you're telling me?
Yeah, kind of. I'm not saying that he won't sign with the Eagles. I'm not saying that the Eagles won't sign him. But, you know, look, let's look around. I think there are some things the Eagles are going to need to be addressing off season, and you just got to wonder. They're under cap space anyhow, I believe anyhow, but
yeah, they're easily under cap space. Yeah.
Yeah. They've got, I mean, there's some room there. I'm not saying there isn't, but there are some things they're going to need to address. And I think QB might be one of them.
Certainly. Oh, just drop that right there. It's something, especially if, he signs with one or two certain agents, no names, Jay-Z.
Oh God.
Mr. Super agent himself, Drew Rosenhaus.
I was going to say, does one begin with a B or a D?
And Boris. Yes. Indeed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Very, very possible. Uncle Mark in the chat, Macklin is signing with Beats by Dre. Yes. By the way, they're on sale for $149 at Walmart on Black Friday or darker Thanksgiving, if the case.
Well, then listen, he'll be getting in touch with our buddy out there.
Colin Kaepernick about that.
Well, yeah. I'm thinking our buddy out there too in Seattle.
That's right. Yes. Russell Wilson, Marshawn Lynch, and
Sherman.
Company up there. Richard Sherman, LOB.
Sherman.
Indeed.
Yeah. I loved his little bit yesterday. That was glorious. Saturday Night Live, that was outstanding, but how do you not get an NFL fine for that?
Yeah, well, because it's the truth. Oops. Oh, wait, we can't let the truth seekers know. But getting back to the topic, I think this is something also because the emergence of Jordan Matthews may give the Eagles the belief that Macklin is expendable and they can get something bigger for him than they thought.
Mm-hmm.
I think Matthews is a blue chipper. I'm sold on him, and I know I shouldn't be sold on a rookie's performance, but he's good. And he has what it takes to be a solid number two or maybe a number one down the road in this league. I think Macklin's expendable, and I'm 50-50 on him coming back next season. I think it's not definite at all, and I agree with you. I think he's going to test the waters.
Here's the other thing that we've come to know, too, about Chip Kelly is that, and we've talked about it right here numerous times, that whole concept of plug and play.
Absolutely.
I don't think this guy is sold to anybody. I think he comes in with a completely anti-NFL mindset. And when I say anti-NFL mindset, I mean he's going to buck the trend on, hey, that's my guy. I got to sign him. We can't do it without him. He's going to look at it and go, you know something? Screw the money. We don't need to be paying this guy. I can put somebody else in there cheaper, and we can get the job done.
Anti-disestablishmentarianism at its finest, you might
you
say.
There you go. I knew you'd come there up you with go. That. You have been so colorful tonight.
I'm as colorful as a peacock. Yes, I am.
Thank God.
Either as colorful as a peacock or as colorful as Al Michaels' hair dye. I'm not sure which, but there you go. Third question for you, good sir. We sort of alluded to this. I actually did at the top talking with Jordan. Cowboys owner Jerry Jones, master of everything hyperbolic, has stated something that even Eagles fans might agree with him on. When asked if tomorrow's game is the biggest Thanksgiving game Dallas has ever hosted, Jones told NFL Network, quote, "It may be the biggest that I can remember." Mm-hmm. He then joked, "Consequently, we hope that in the spirit of Thanksgiving, those Eagles would cut us a little slack. You think they're interested in doing that? No, I don't either." Mm-hmm. So, high praise for both the Eagles and the game at hand. Michael.
Okay, so the question is there anything to the fact this is the biggest game?
Pretty much what I'm asking you is Jerry Jones in the right saying this is the biggest game to hit Dallas on Thanksgiving?
Well, now, you know, I hate to do it again, but I might just have to be segueing over to a different game from 25 years ago.
Uh-huh.
That was a pretty darn big game because if you recall, well, maybe you don't, if I'm not mistaken, by winning that game and then ultimately beating Dallas then a couple of weeks later in 1989, that put the Eagles into the playoffs. And I think, I have to go back and check my numbers, but I think Dallas was knocked out of the playoffs as a result. So that game on Thanksgiving Day, to go out there and to beat Dallas the way that they did, in fact, they shut them out in that game. I believe it was 27-0. That was a pretty big game in 1989. No, I might agree that this is a big game. I asked, it's funny because I brought it up last night on our Red Zone Blitz program right here on the Friday Sports Radio Network with Brandon, and I threw all three of the Turkey Day games at him, all three of them, top to bottom. Now, I don't know if you even noticed this, Jim, but I'm going to point it out to you. A little bit of an anomaly here in tomorrow's games. Number one, they're all division games. Number two, they are all NFC games. There's no AFC representation in any of the games tomorrow. All
True.
Three of them are division games. So I said, which is the biggest of the three games? I frankly thought he was going to come back with the Eagles-Dallas. He came back with Seattle-San Francisco. I think tomorrow it's the biggest game. Without a doubt, it's the biggest game tomorrow. It's one of the bigger games I can remember on any Thanksgiving Day in recent memory.
It's Eagles-Dallas that's the biggest game. I can see why he would say Seattle-San Francisco because of the NFC West and wild card positioning and if the Super Bowl champions are legitimately back. But I think that that nightcap is second fiddle to the main appetizer at 4:30 Thursday afternoon. And that actually segues nicely. You're setting me up very nicely for the final question I have. You're talking about all these games, triple header of football. The game that starts it all off is an NFC North battle between Detroit and Chicago. How nice can I say this? On paper, several months back, it looked like it was going to be kind of an interesting game.
Mm-hmm.
But Chicago right now is bowling shoe ugly bad.
Mm-hmm.
And Detroit will probably win this handily. So I dare ask, why watch this game? I'm actually contemplating not watching this game at all. Instead, I'm actually thinking about, watching the National Dog Show, which will be on at the same time on NBC. So this is kind of an extended version of the question because I have to add something to the singers here. Me choosing to watch the National Dog Show instead of Chicago versus Detroit, I ask you... Worthy of a violation.
I was going to say, you mean except for a man card ruling?
Yeah,
is that
exactly
what you're asking
what
for?
I was going to ask you, yes.
Yeah, no. It could be. It could be, except for the fact that I heard that Chicago Bears' Jay Cutler, he was actually going to be at the dog show. So
he'll be there on tape, ladies and gentlemen. Yes,
he planned on not attending the game tomorrow on Thanksgiving Day at all, but opted to take his dog to the dog show.
He'll be on tape delay 2 weeks back because it was taped in advance.
Yeah.
The argument I have for watching the National Dog Show, if I may, there's a drinking game for it. There's a drinking game for everything.
Oh,
there's probably a drinking game for this damn show, ladies and gentlemen. let me give you a couple of excerpts for the drinking game. This is from a site called Bustle.com, B-U-S-T-L-E.com. Just search for the National Dog Show drinking game. For example, every time someone compares a dog to a human being, everyone has to yell, woof, and then take a sip of beer. The last person to yell, woof, has to chug the rest of his or her beer. Whenever a dog breaks from its show persona and acts playful, you have to take a sip of beer. If anybody quotes the great movie Best in Show, everybody's got a drink. Yeah, that could be. I'm upset there's no reference to it. Anytime somebody sounds like Joe Garagiola calling a dog show, just pound it down. If you correctly predict which dog is going to win its breed group, choose one person to take a shot. And, of course, if you correctly guess the Best in Show winner, everybody must take a celebratory shot in your honor. So.
And see, they missed one because Jay Cutler is going to be there.
He is one ugly dog,
They missed it. They missed it. You know, which sad dog does Jay Cutler look like now?
Right about now, I think he looks not so much like a dog, but like Grumpy Cat. Yeah, he's not smiling. He can't smile.
No.
And it's not because of dwarfism. It's because of lameism, because he's a lame quarterback. As the kids would say, he's hella lame right now, I think. The proper term. And that does it for another rousing edition. Yeah. Probably the last one. Now, who am I kidding? We'll do it again next week, probably. Anything on Inside the War Nest. Still have some time for you to call in and weigh in if you so desire at 347-826-9964. And before we give our predictions, let's go back in time 25 years to 1989. The Cowboys were a horrible team that year. They would end up ultimately winning just one game. It was the first year.
Oh, okay. Well, I was way off, wasn't I? They didn't.
I just had to double check, and I just did that.
All right. Clean me up on that one. Go ahead. Good.
That's okay. Well, remember, this was the first year Jimmy Johnson was head coach. It was the first year of Troy Aikman at quarterback. And now Troy Aikman will be in the booth with some guy who has a big receding hairline named Joe Buck. Everything comes circular, whatever. Let's go back, first of all, to the memories of this game from a man who lived it firsthand, current Fox analyst, and the man who really should join Cy Sperling in the Hair Club for Men, Jimmy Johnson.
Guys, I'll tell you what fires me up. Great rivalry games. When I coached the Cowboys, my favorite game was facing Buddy Ryan and the Eagles. Buddy had one of the great defenses of all time, Reggie White, Jerome Brown. We were terrible my first season in Dallas. Terrible.
Terrible.
But for some reason, the Eagles put a bounty on our kicker, Luis Zendejas. To this day, I still have no idea why they wanted to hurt a 5'6", 160-pound kicker. So there we were, Thanksgiving Day game in Dallas. Sure enough, first kickoff, two Eagles went after Zendejas. He cowered down, got flipped in the air, and staggered to the wrong sideline. Kickers. I was so furious, I went looking for Buddy after the game, but he waddled that big old fat butt of his into the locker room. Bounty Bowl 2 came a couple of weeks later. Buddy told the papers he resented my fat comment, made a crack about being no East Carolinas in the NFL and a dig at me, implying I beat a bunch of cupcake teams when I was coaching in college. I fired back at him. Yes, there are East Carolinas in the NFL. Unfortunately, we are East Carolina. Come game day, the Philly fans let me know how they felt. That's when they pelted me with snowballs. Terry was doing the game. They fired a few snowballs at him, too.
Ah, yes, the good old days. The good old days, yes. Oh, boy. And obviously the snowballs didn't affect Mr. Johnson's hair, but that was obviously, and you can speak more to it than I, that was a game where it was kind of a welcome to the NFL moment for Jimmy Johnson and Troy Aikman and the Dallas Cowboys, a young team coming off of losing their legendary head coach, and they were just trying to get any which way but loose out of there. What are your recollections of the Bounty Bowl? The first one, we'll talk about the second one in a couple of weeks, but the original one Thanksgiving a quarter century ago.
Well, I remember that game quite well for, I guess, I don't know, just any number of reasons, except for it was the second game of the day. Of course, there were only two games on Thanksgiving at that particular time. Detroit was always one of them,
right.
And that preceded it. And I don't even think it was as early. It wasn't even scheduled as early now as it is now. It was scheduled like, you know, it might have been like 1:30 or 2 o'clock kickoff. So the Dallas game would come on at like 6:30. And I watched this one in the basement, which was nicely decorated, beautiful finished basement of my mother-in-law's, and a big Thanksgiving spread. They had the TV was up on the bar, and I mean, it's 1989, so you're watching everything on old cable television with not too many channels back at that day.
Did the TV have a knob on it? No remote control?
It did.
The whole...
Because this was the finished basement, so the good TV was upstairs. We're in the basement, and see, anything you know, back at that day, the things you wanted to discard, you just put in the basement, in the finished basement, right, on the bar. And so we're down there, and we're watching that, and, you know, well, we're – but, you know, here's the bottom line, Jim. And it doesn't really matter what the Eagles' schedule, what their record was at that particular time or what the Dallas Cowboys' record was at that particular time. It was the Philadelphia Eagles playing the Dallas Cowboys on Thanksgiving Day. And I got to tell you, I remember coming into that house, and I tore down the stairs into that basement because I knew the game was going to be on. And I said, here, set them up, Joe. Let's go. I am sitting back, and I am watching this game. And it doesn't matter. You just get fired up for that matchup, particularly if it's on Thanksgiving Day. And it makes no difference what the records of the two teams are.
Oh, yeah. But this year, oh, boy, it makes all the difference to some degree because the division lead temporarily, perhaps permanently, is at stake here. I mean, the winner gets not just a game up, but the tiebreaker head up a little bit as well, leg up, I should say. Let's go back in time again 25 years ago. Let's hear what Jimmy Johnson had to say about his opponent after the game.
They won the game. I congratulate them. They're a very, very talented team, the most talented team we've played so far this year. But I have absolutely no respect for the way they played the game.
Did you say anything, Buddy?
Oh, I would have said something to Buddy, but he wouldn't stand on the field long enough. He put his big fat rear end into the dressing room.
Well, what was classic, though, and I tried to find the audio and video of it today, and I couldn't find it. What was classic was Buddy Ryan's retort to that.
Oh, yeah.
And his retort to it was when he was told by reporters there after the fact that Jimmy Johnson had this to say, he said, oh, geez, I in that wonderful tone of Buddy Ryan's, I mean, he was slow talking, he had that southern drawl. That's really disappointing he would say something like that because, you know, I've lost a few pounds recently. I thought I looked pretty good.
Exactly. See, Rex and Rob wish they could be their dad. They wish they could be Buddy Ryan. He was he was a character. He really was. The master of the 46 defense. Oh, God love him. By the way, 2 weeks from now, we will kind of reflect as well on Bounty Bowl 2, and I actually do have the audio of Kerry Bradshaw and Vern Lundquist getting hit by snowballs in the booth.
Oh, there you go. Yep.
Yeah, poor Grandpa Vern. He was still a grandpa back then. He was only 195 years old in 1989. God bless him. But, it was like the high of highs to beat. It's always great to beat Dallas, but to stick a fork in them, as it were, when they're down and out is a beautiful thing, as you well know.
It's going to be more beautiful, though, but I'm going to tell you right now, it would absolutely be more beautiful to beat them tomorrow.
Absolutely. And this rivalry, I think this is the apex for it. I really think it is the apex for the first time since, of course, the NFC title game almost 35 years ago. This means so much more. You can tell in the streets, in the city, in the atmosphere, people are excited about this. The rivalry is renewed, and it may be better than ever because you have so many people. You have your villains and your heroes and all that sort of thing. I love it. These next 2 weeks, of course, sandwiched with the game with Seattle in between, are going to be very telling, not just for the fan base, for the team, but for the NFL at large, where each of these teams sit on the NFC pecking order. Let's get to it. Let me put it off for an hour and 20 minutes, and we got to pick this game. It's the law, as it were. I will defer to you because you're the senior citizen. I mean, you're the veteran panelist here. Well, you're not AARP, right? Well, maybe you are. Who gives a damn?
Well, I've Eagles. Been solicited. Let's put it that way.
Jim, I'm leading the show now. Eagles, Cowboys, break it down. Who you got and by how much?
You know, I was saying, I remember just what it was 2 weeks ago, Jim, we were sitting here, we're talking about the Green Bay Packers, and I said, oh, man, to beat that team, to beat that Packers team, everybody just step back, go book your flight to Arizona, start getting those tickets ready because we're going to the Super Bowl. We're kind of at the same place right now. But I got to be honest, we're going into Dallas. I actually thought there was a chance that the Eagles could knock off the Packers. I'm going to be honest with you. I don't like this matchup with the Dallas Cowboys. I don't like it for a couple. I actually prefer the matchup 2 weeks from now. I like that one. I don't like this one.
I see where you're going with this, but go ahead.
Yeah, I think the Eagles lose this game for a couple of reasons. One, it's a home game. Two, both teams are on the same level. Look, the playing field is level. They've both had the same amount of time to prepare. So you got to give the home field advantage to Dallas. But we've talked about some of the other advantages. The defensive edge, I give a little bit to Dallas. Special teams, obviously, you give to Philadelphia. I just think that in their home on Thanksgiving Day, they're not going to lose this game. I'll call it. The Eagles win, the Cowboys win. The Cowboys cover easily 35-28.
So a touchdown differential. Interesting.
Yep.
Couple of things. Number one, these are two teams that are clearly second-tier NFC teams, and I don't mean that as a knock against them. They would both lose to Green Bay. There's no question in my mind they would both lose to Green Bay at Lambeau in the playoffs. Facing the Cowboys is different than facing the Packers because they're not as stout defensively. They have a good defense, a little bit better than average, but nowhere near the Packers level. As good as Tony Romo is, and I think he is a top six, top seven quarterback, he's not Aaron Rodgers. Okay, he's not infallible. DeMarco Murray, though, is a beast. And if the Eagles can contain DeMarco Murray, they've got a shot. It comes down to the intangibles. It comes down to special teams. And as sick and as maybe, you know, maybe I'm in the holiday spirit and I'm hoping for a Thanksgiving miracle. I think it comes down to the leg of Cody Parkey. In the final minute of the game, he kicks a game-winning field goal from 51-52 out, and the Eagles win the game 30-27. One other fun fact. This is the fifth time the Eagles have played on Thanksgiving Day. They have won their previous four Thanksgiving Day games. So I'm riding the history. I'm riding the leg of Cody Parkey. 30-27, Philadelphia wins.
I hope you're right there, Trendmaster.
I'm all about the trends. About the trends, no filler. I don't know, but yeah, Megan Trainor, I'm not. But if she's available, call me. There you go. Our predictions are in the books. This show is in the books. Mike, first of all,
been
a lot of fun. We went a little extra time, very deserving. Our thanks again to Jordan Ross from CowboysHQ.com. Check them out. You'll learn a little bit more about our opponent on Thanksgiving Day. Any big plans at the frat house for Thanksgiving, aside from watching the game?
Yes, we have a big, big family get-together just west of here out in Redding. And we will be many, many folk there, and we will be getting there before the kickoff of the first game. You can bet that one, and we will be sitting there all plugged in with our electronics and tracking everything.
How far we've come. No antennas, no rabbit ears to worry about. It's Wi-Fi and digital cable or satellite.
You got it, man. You got it.
Stuff.
Could it be any better than that, huh? Hey, at least
absolutely.
We're not dealing with 1989 technology anymore.
And we're not dealing with 85 inches of snow, so that's kind of a plus as well. Well, I'm just thoughts and prayers to the folks in Buffalo, by the way. They are going to have the game in Buffalo this Sunday, though there is some minor damage to the stadium.
But, boy, did you see what the hell they got that thing cleaned up? My God.
It's amazing. I mean, yeah. Wow. And they were going to hire people. Well, I guess they hired enough people at $10 a pop or not. Nice effort, Buffalo. Nice effort. And I'll be watching that game before I watch Chicago-Detroit, to be honest, because that game has some interesting – no, that game has some interesting bearings. I want to see Buffalo get to the playoffs. I think they're a playoff team this year. They very well could be. They'll at least have a 9-7 record, maybe 10-6. They can do it. It'd be a nice feel-good story for the people up there. That's all. I'm all about a feel-good story. You know that?
There you go.
So happy Thanksgiving to everybody there at the frat house. Happy Thanksgiving to you, Mike. We will be talking with you 1 week from now, hopefully after
happy
a Philadelphia
Thanksgiving to everybody
Thanksgiving.
Out there listening. Yep.
Absolutely. And yes, I'll echo that. Happy Thanksgiving. Have a safe, happy Thanksgiving to all of you. If you're going to go Black Friday shopping, by the way, just take it down a notch. Everything's going to be okay. And if you don't get the deals, well, you know, they're Cyber Monday. By the way, Mike, what are you getting me on Black Friday?
Do it on Black Friday. That's all I ask. If they're going to do Black Friday, do it on Black Friday. Listen, you know, you never know.
Same thing you get me every year, right? No. For Mike McShane, I'm Jim Williams. Enjoy the turkey, the turducken, the chicken, the goose, the tofurkey, whatever the hell you eat. And join us back here next week for another edition of fun and frivolity that we call Inside the War Nest. Happy Thanksgiving. So long, everybody.